But no matter what kind of platform you go with, it always comes down to you always want to buy under price attention, because business is all about people, right? You have your customers, your employees, and stakeholders or shareholders behind that. And the question is, how can you communicate your brand, your product to your potential customers, and how can you get them in the cheapest way? Because no matter how great your product is, you need to communicate it.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast, where this time we have my friend Paul Franzreb. He is a fascinating guy, and he comes highly recommended from Chris Erthel, who remains one of our best interviewees in terms of downloads we've had so far on this show. So a recommendation indeed. So Paul is the founder of paulvalentine.com, a jewelry and accessory business that grew from 260,000 revenue in its very first year, bootstrapped with 15 grand in euros with just two people, through to a whopping $35 million in revenue just last year. It actually scaled from that 260 mark to eight figures in its first year, which is incredible scale, which might well be why Paul has been invited numerous times by Facebook themselves to teach Facebook employees and other DMVBs in the crowd just how he does it and what all the magic actually is, and to reveal himself and his methods. So right now Paul sits with 60 people in his team. They've got a brand new headquarters. They are scaling quickly, even during the climate that we're in the world. And so you can tell by my voice just how excited I am to invite Paul to be on the show. Paul, how are you?
Morning, Martin. Good. Thank you very much for that awesome introduction.
Thank you very much for making it easy by being awesome, Paul. Whereabouts in the world are you?
In Mannheim in Germany, which is nearby Frankfurt, which is a nice midtown where I have grown up, basically, and where our headquarters.
Nice. Okay, so there's a lot of places we could start, but typically on this show, we find some sort of point in your past which began to point you in the direction of entrepreneurship. So is there a point that you can tell us about, Paul? And if so, please paint a word picture.
Of course, yeah. So for myself and my sister, which is also my business partner and co-founder, we came from an entrepreneurial family. So our stepfather has been an entrepreneur, and that has really inspired us, because the one thing I love about entrepreneurship is obviously the freedom you get. You can decide by yourself when you are working, where you're working, and you are basically in charge of your own success and future. And that really inspired us to really do our own thing. And as we finished school, went to university, immediately realized, hey, studying is nice, but founding a business is better. So we said, screw that, and let's start our own thing.
Amazing. And so what was your the thing that you decided to create initially with your sister, was that Paul Valentine, or was that something else?
Yep.
First, so it was
exactly
straight into the jewelry store.
It was Paul Valentine, and it's our first business, so it's a big success story in terms of having our first business succeed, because obviously most entrepreneurs go through multiple failures at the beginning. And I guess that's the hardest part at the beginning, because you don't really know if the business will succeed or not. And also our story sounds amazing, and it is, but the first 6 months were really slow, actually. Like, nothing really happened at the beginning. It's really a question of your persistence and your commitment to the business without seeing the initial results. But you have to stick to it, and you have to keep going and really believe in it. And then eventually it will succeed.
Nice. So what made you choose e-commerce, and what made you choose jewelry? Are you a women's jewelry wearer, Paul?
No, I'm not. Obviously my sister. So I couldn't find the business without my sister, and we really accommodate each other in a perfect way. And the reason why we went into e-commerce, because we really want to build a brand And it's a great way to start a business because you can start with less with a limited amount of capital and really scale fast. And at that time in 2015, the whole direct-to-consumer movement just started. There were a few brands which really grew fast, and we said, okay, let's ride that wave of the direct-to-consumer e-commerce movement. And also obviously social media began to explode. Instagram was new. Influencer marketing was still a hidden secret, right? Not many brands have been doing it. Facebook ads as well. So the whole social media thing was just new. And we felt like we understand it, and we understand social media and the audience which is on it, because we are the same age group. I'm 25, by the way. And that really, yeah, brought us to the conclusion that we have a chance to win here, and we just jumped into the cold water and tried it.
Wow. And so you said in the first 6 months, not a lot happened. Do you remember any of the kind of early mistakes you made in the first 6 months, or any of the early frustrations that you experienced?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there are tons of mistakes, and I think I can't really mention them because it's so much, and you just learn. And that's the most important thing, that you constantly learn. And the thing is, when you start out, unless you have like a big personal brand or a big media budget, like how should people know you? So you have to build your audience, you have to build your customer base, and it will take time no matter what. Nothing happens overnight. So for us, the beginning has been really slow. So obviously we have made revenue, but it was slow and actually below expectation. And so there were voices in our closest people. So, hey, do you want to cancel this? Should you give it up? Or do you want to push through? And hey, by the way, finish your university. And that's a difficult situation for a founder, because you really have to listen to your own voice and really think, okay, is this going to play out or not? And I think in most cases it is, because it really is a question of how you manage the business and how you drive it forward and how you innovate and find the sweet spot.
Nice. Right. So we like getting into the nitty gritty. We like getting into the weeds on this show. Do you remember maybe one or two specific things that you got wrong or assumed one thing and experienced the opposite in those early days?
Well, I think for what was really difficult for us was, from a supply chain point of view, to find the right suppliers. That was extremely difficult, and we had there two failures because we didn't have the right suppliers, and then it worked, but there were certainly some issues from sample production to product quality of the samples and stuff like that. So we had some bad luck there, and that cost us time and money. So the one thing I can definitely say is make sure you find the right supplier and do your research. And the best thing here, by the way, is to go to fairs, because no matter how much you search on or get an introduction, obviously. And but fairs are the best way to find the right suppliers, in my opinion.
So when you say so test and find the right supplier and go to fairs, are we so what is your supplier European or Chinese or North American or African?
Obviously, as all the other brands as well, it's China. China's the main hub for manufacturing, and China, I mean, every iPhone is manufactured in China, right? Yeah. And the one thing they really nailed is the scale of manufacturing, because China is not a cheap labor country anymore, but it's the best country when it comes to having the skill to manufacture things at scale. Like, no one can do that like them.
Absolutely. So when you've been attending the fairs, you mean in China, right? So you've been flying over there and attending fairs there?
We didn't, because we have been super capital efficient and we didn't have money to fly there, right? So what we did is we went to Google and searched for suppliers, and then the first two weren't good, and then for the third one we had really luck and found the right one, and we have been working with this one since the beginning until now.
Oh, amazing. So you're buying from a company that sources, like you said, a buyer who's sourcing from the manufacturers, no?
No, we work directly with the suppliers. We're working directly with the suppliers, and I recommend to do that, because you really want to have that communication and direct line of the direct relationship to them to really make sure you can control product quality and product development, obviously. And working with suppliers in China, it is all about relationship. And we have been able to form a really good one with one big supplier, but now obviously we have multiple suppliers. And for jewelry, for example, we have also started to work with suppliers in Thailand, and we are also looking into Italy, for example, to manufacture some other products which are coming out this year. And so we're really expanding also our supply chain network. But yeah, it all comes down to relationship building. Right.
Absolutely. And so I wanted to touch a little bit about the slightly unusual maybe relationship between you and your co-founder, who's your sister. Now, typically when founders, co-founders work really well, it's like you described in your case, the personality, strengths and weaknesses are supportive. The yin and yang effect. So how would you describe your personality? I mean, if you know your Myers-Briggs type, that'd be great as well, but like, how would you describe your personality and how you approach things compared to your sister?
Of course. So the name of my sister, by the way, is Marlene Franzrieb, and she's really the creative mind of our business, and I'm all, so to say, the business backend and finance and sales guy. So we really accommodate each other very well, because she handles everything from product to brand to creatives to everything basically that the customer sees and touches, and I handle everything that happens afterwards. And that combination is working really well for us, because if I would found the business myself, I wouldn't have that creative mind and that creative approach as she has, and she doesn't have the business back end side of things as I have. So the combination of that really has allowed us to succeed. And obviously I love having a business with family, although it comes with challenges, because the level of trust that you have obviously is not achievable no matter how good your friendship is and stuff like that, because obviously family is so important, and it's really nice to work with your family in that way, if it works. And now we have a very good working relationship, and it works very well for us.
Love that. And you said you came from an entrepreneurial family. Is the entrepreneurial endeavor, Paul Valentine, what you've got with your sister now, the largest business in your family, or have you still got a little way to go to catch up?
No, it is actually, yeah.
It's the largest.
Yeah.
Was that a point that was in your head when you crossed it, and you made a note to send some messages out to the rest of your family, or you just cruise through it?
No. Actually, our mother is handling all the accounting things. So she has her own accounting agency basically, and does all the accounting work for us. So they have access to the numbers, and they have seen it by himself basically.
I imagine that has a pros and cons as well. I imagine maybe like the next Christmas present or something you send her, she go, oh really, I've seen the numbers, is that
all you're gonna say?
Yeah, when you send her one of your bracelets or something like that, she goes, come on, that I don't know. Yeah. The next thing which is incredible, so 2015, 260k revenue, and 6 months of that there wasn't a lot going on, in your own words. 2016, 10 million in revenue, eight figures revenue in the very second year of trading. That's incredible scale. What did you change? What sort of vein of gold did you hit, or what did you do to create that massive steep curve like that?
Yep. Well, obviously we are direct to consumer, so we only sell online, direct to consumer, through e-commerce and through Shopify for us in our case. And obviously when we started, we didn't know anything about online marketing in that sense. And so a couple of months into the business, I thought, okay, we really need to get knowledge here. And then I remember really clearly, because one night I just sat down and went to YouTube and put in online marketing, and then a video of Gary Vaynerchuk popped up. And then since then I was following Gary V, and I really dive deep into that whole online marketing scene and how to scale businesses on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and really understand the way to do that. And we started small, and we started basically with 20 euros ad spend a day, and then really, really scaled it up to significant numbers. And that combined with influencer marketing has really been the growth factor for us, which has exploded, obviously, our business in terms of sales.
Amazing. And so back in 2016, was it, you said that you learned from Gary Vee, Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and so on. Were you advertising on all of those channels, or was it just Facebook and then influencers after?
We started with influencers and Facebook together, and I truly believe that both are working very well together, because you really build brand and awareness with influencer marketing, and then with Facebook you can really drive sales. Ideally with both, obviously, but influencer marketing is also a heavy brand awareness channel, which builds trust, obviously, especially when you're starting out, because people don't know your brand. And when they see simply an ad on Facebook or Instagram, they don't know the brand and they don't know how legit it is, right? And if an influencer is promoting it, they are standing with their personal brand for that product or brand, which really builds that trust that you need, in my opinion. So I think it's the best way to combine both. And that's what we did, and that worked extremely well.
Nice.
Right now, obviously, influencer marketing has become really expensive, unfortunately. So 4 or 5 years ago, it was extremely cheap in comparison to the numbers today, unfortunately. And I don't really like the direction it's heading at the moment, because the prices become a little bit too absurd in some cases, which is hard to make that business case work for some brands, especially if you're starting out. Like, you can't pay an influencer $6,000 for one post. It's simply not commercially viable. What I do recommend in this sense, however, is to work with micro-influencers, so influencers with smaller followers to 50,000, possibly up to 100,000 followers, and they will be much more affordable from a pricing point of view, but they will also drive extreme brand awareness and leverage for the brand, especially if you do it at scale.
Absolutely. And so what sort of influencers like were you looking for back then? But also, it'd be interesting to I think note between 2015 and 2016, what countries were you targeting, or what parts of the world were you targeting?
We have been shipping worldwide from day one, and our first customer has actually been in the US, which is quite nice because Marlene and I are big US fans. And we have been shipping worldwide, and we always wanted to build a global brand. But very quickly, we really focused on the European markets, especially Germany, France, UK, and really focused our energy, marketing efforts, and influencer marketing also there. And that really allowed us to scale. And then obviously you have synergies, and you just reach other people. For example, US people who follow British influencers and stuff like that. So I highly recommend to ship worldwide, because right now with the globalization and with the carrier setup, if you have the right product, you probably can do it. And the upside in terms of additional sales is huge.
Nice. What specific things did you spring to mind with your in your journey, your rapid scale up to that 10 million level? So in those early stages, breaking through the eight-figure barrier there, what specific changes spring to mind as levers that you moved that really helped you on that way in that time, other than, of course, influencers?
Yeah. So we really increased basically our media spend, and that sounds simple. However, I feel like most people are afraid of doing that, because most people want an extremely high immediate return of your media spend. And I definitely can understand that, but you you have to be confident, and you have to, you can't be afraid of spending money on marketing, and be it with performance marketing, with Facebook ads or YouTube ads, or be it with influencer marketing, you have to have confidence and you have to try things. Like, we have lost money on the way. We have lost money on influencer in some ways, in some cases, but overall it turned out very well. And I feel like some other business owner or brands are simply scared of increasing their spend.
So were you looking at a immediate ROAS on the first sale from your ads, or were you looking more at a lifetime value return, or like, what was your approach that enabled you to cajones up and spend more money?
So unless you are founded by venture capital, I think you don't have the luxury of looking at customer lifetime value. And it's I don't like to look at that, because you're looking at the future and you don't have certainty that it actually happens, right? You don't know if the customer is purchasing multiple times for you or simply one time. And that's one of the reasons why lots of these American D2C brands, which are heavily funded by VC, are not profitable, because they overspend actually on marketing. And you really have to find the holy grail of scaling your ad spend, but obviously staying profitable, and obviously also in the short term. So you can't be unprofitable in terms of your spending. So you really have to make sure that you are ideally, from an ROI point of view, at above 3. That is, I think, the market standard. And it really depends on your product and your brand from an attribution window. For us, for example, we need multiple touch points, and we need multiple placements in terms of ads, and we need 4 or 5 times placements to really drive the conversion, basically. And for some other business where the cart value might be lower, it's maybe only 1. It really depends how your attribution window is designed. But I think for most businesses, it really should be direct response. So you should really look at your daily and last 7 days return on ad spend.
Nice. And what is your typical cart value?
It's around, I think, 120 euros, around that.
No, so it's on the it's not obviously not on the higher end for stores, but on the higher end for e-commerce brands as we know it, right, in the space. And so that allows you to spend a little bit more with customers. Does that mean that is there anything that you put in place to encourage it higher than that? I mean, I'm looking at your hero products, certainly the ones that are on the front page, and it looks like you would need 2 or 3 of those to be able to hit that AOV. Is it actually a lot of your customers are coming in on higher level products that aren't on the front page, or is it that customers are buying multiple items?
So initially we only started with watches, and then we added jewelry and also bags, and to really accommodate the entire accessory category. And we generally see a lot of purchases with watches and jewelry together. That works quite well. And it's obviously the watches have a higher cart value. Mm. And I think that's where the number is coming from. And yeah, I think obviously a higher cart value helps you tremendously, because you have more space in terms of your margins. If your margins is too tight, it's very easy that you overspend on marketing and not being profitable. So it's obviously good to have a product with a higher AOV, because it really gives you some flexibility and some room for errors, obviously, which is what you need for the beginning, in my opinion, because you will make mistakes and you will overspend here and there. But as long as you can compensate it in the overall picture, then you're good.
Nice. Now, changing up for a bit before we jump into more years, because I realize we're only at 2016 here, technically on the timeline. But I wanted to ask you, Paul, how important is packaging in the overall customer experience?
I think now it becomes really important with the whole sustainability shift that we are seeing in the world. So the customers are becoming more aware of sustainability, and they have expectations of every brand, and it's a key element which every brand should follow. So we are currently redesigning our entire packaging and making it 100% sustainable, which I'm very proud of and very excited for. Nice. And in the beginning, we also had a very good packaging, in my opinion. But one of the issues we had is we added more and more products. So there has been accruing inconsistency in terms of sizes and colors and stuff like that. So one thing I would definitely recommend is make it sustainable, use no plastic or minimize it as much as possible, and really make it as consistent as possible and try to own your brand color if you have one.
I love that. So absolutely. So I mean, so my brand New Brew, from the beginning, we were like, right, it's going to be plastic free. Everything is going to be plastic free. Mm. The world is going in that way. And I've said maybe once or twice publicly before, I would absolutely love to see just a small change on Amazon. You know how you have, when you're shopping on Amazon, you've got the filters down the left hand side, so you can choose the price point, the delivery speed, and so on. I would love to see one little filter there that says plastic free, not plastic, like contains plastic, yep, doesn't contain plastic, particularly in the packaging. It would be such a small change that Amazon could make, but if they did, there's a large percentage of the world that cares about this stuff, and it's growing.
Yep.
That switch would float some many brands to the top of those listings.
True.
You know, the benefit is something I would absolutely love to see. So yeah, opportunities to mention that, and hopefully have the right person who can maybe influence that change hear it, is you know, an opportunity not to be missed.
Definitely.
But yeah, congrats, and obviously you're ahead of the curve there with the packaging change and curve. Do you ship just from Germany, or do you have distribution or warehouses around the world now?
We have one warehouse in Germany, and we ship worldwide from that location, and that works quite well because Germany is an amazing place to ship to entire Europe because it's in the center, and if you ship worldwide, obviously you really reduce your overall margin, but with DHL Express and UPS you will probably be able to negotiate some good rates, which make that shipment to the US or that shipment to Australia, for example, commercially viable.
Okay, cool. So do you just take the hit on the shipping? Say you're shipping to Australia, do you take the hit on that, or does the customer pay a little bit more because they're in Australia?
Yeah, in our case, it really depends on the AOV. So if the AOV is high enough, then it's definitely free. If it's, I think it's, if it's below $100, then we charge, I think, $10 for that, around something like that. But if it's above, then it's free, and we basically absorb those additional costs. And obviously, again, the order is not as profitable as an order which from a European country, but it's still, the margin is still okay, I would say, and the uplift of growing your brand there is always bigger than short-term profits, because eventually you'll be able to obviously improve supply chain and set up a hub there, a warehouse, and then improve your profitability.
Nice. Okay, and so we scaled from 2016, where we were sitting about 10 million, 2017, 30 million, and last year sitting at 35 million. And so even after that massive jump to 2016, you then still 300% increased on the next year. You weren't done scaling yet. When you're hitting these eight-figure levels, these revenue levels, what kind of problems and challenges are brands like yours facing in this space compared to that early space?
Obviously, your entire operation becomes much more complex, and that is really something which we struggled with in the beginning, to really be able to scale your operations from a logistics point of view, supply chain, and also customer service. So all those stuff in the back end, which has become really challenging for us. But eventually we have been able to resolve them after some time by outsourcing our logistics to a 3PL. I'm a big believer in that. I don't think you should handle your shipping yourself. And obviously hiring more staff in the customer service team, and also building our internal business back end systems and processes and structures. And that has really allowed us to improve our operation and allowed us then to focus on growth again.
Nice. And what about sales channels right now, or traffic sources right now? How would you, if this circle or the cake's 100%, what size are the various different slices right now in terms of where your traffic's coming from?
Yeah, so we only advertise on social media at the moment, and we are on every single channel. So obviously on Facebook, Instagram, but also on Snapchat, for example, which is an interesting place because CPMs are extremely low because it's still quite new and you can reach millions of people for a CPM of like 70 cents, which is nothing. And we spend also on Pinterest, on YouTube, obviously. YouTube is also huge and it can be a really game changer depending on your business and product. For example, for lots of software companies, it's working tremendously well, like Monday.com, for example. I think we have all seen the ads, right? And obviously TikTok is new and becoming more and more important. And they just started to roll out their self-service ads manager, which is quite interesting because same as Snapchat, CPMs are extremely low. So you really can't get that reach for that money anywhere else at the moment, and I'm always a big believer, no matter what kind of platform you go with, it's always comes down to the, you always want to buy under price attention, right? Because people as a business is all about people, right? You have your customers, your employees, and the stakeholders or shareholders behind that. And it's really the question is, how can you communicate your brand, your product to your potential customers, and how can you get them in the cheapest way? Because no matter how great your product is, you need to communicate it, and you need to find the audience, and we need to show them your product, basically. And I'm a big believer in buying that underpriced attention, and that means for us that we want to be a first mover on all those new platforms, because that's the places where you can get the cheapest CPMs, the cheapest reach. And in TikTok, for example, also or LinkedIn as well, and tremendous organic reach at the moment.
Amazing. And so, and I love that, the underpriced attention. And yeah, absolutely, it's still people on these platforms, and you're leaving your mark, and you're gaining their attention. So how would you, so what's the breakdown of traffic for you right now in terms of how much of your overall traffic comes from the various different locations?
Obviously, a ton is coming from Facebook and Instagram. A lot is coming from direct as well, which I'm very proud of, because we are building a more and more loyal community and customer fan base around our business, which is nice. And then I think the second most important channel is influencer marketing for us still, although prices are becoming huge. And then it's YouTube, Snapchat, Pinterest, and TikTok.
Nice. And so influencers, are you now focusing more on the micro or the massive people and sort of skipping the bit in between, or is it just micro, or have you still used training?
In our experience, there are some, if you're working with influencers which have 1 million, 2 million followers, for example, they are very expensive, but they really help you to, they are like prestige influencers, like they help you to build brand, but you won't really drive sales probably through them. It's good to have them to really show that you have a name and that you are there in the market, but then you might really drive profitable conversions through your smaller micro to macro influencers. So and we're seeing good results with, for example, influencers who have 100,000 followers around that, mm-hmm. and driving conversions through them because they are more profitable and ROI simply better.
What sort of price does a 100,000 follower influencer typically charge nowadays, off the top of your head, roughly?
It really depends, and it depends also on the market. For example, there's a big difference between Germany, France, and the UK, and Italy. And but usually between $500 and $1,500 euros.
Wow. What, for a post that's on permanently, or a story feature, or
usually one post and one story placement. So we usually combine both things.
Nice. And how do you upfront figure out which influencers you want to target, and as well as that, taking into account what country, or even knowing what country they're from in advance?
Well, that is also a difficult thing. Obviously, with influencer marketing, not everything is as black as white as we hope, as we want it to be, right?
No.
And there are certain tools. One of them is InfluencerDB, for example, which is quite popular.
Influencer.db, do you say?
.b, exactly, yeah.
InfluencerB.
Influencer.db, exactly, .com.
Okay.
Yeah, so which stands for database, right?
Gotcha.
And it's a lovely tool which really allows you to understand the analytics and the metrics of each and every influencers, and really allows you to compare them, and then hopefully you'll be able to pick the right one for your brand, because no matter what the numbers are looking like, it really comes also down to the fact that you need to have an influencer who is authentic and who really fits to your brand, and who can present your brand also in the right way, and which fits to the lifestyle of the influencer, actually.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I'm peppering you with questions here, and but you're standing strong, and you're kicking butt here. Let's move for a second to the speaking at the Facebook events. So, can you talk to us about that? Like what's going on? So Facebook's obviously aware of you. Why do you have any idea of your size in terms of compared to other media buyers in your area? And does that play a part in Facebook's love for you?
Yeah, well, certainly. We are certainly one of the bigger ones in Germany, and especially from looking at our history and the speed of our growth, for sure. I guess I have been invited to a couple of events, which I had the pleasure to speak in front of a group and really tell our story and how we grew on the platform and how we basically scale our campaigns. And we're not the biggest spender, obviously. There are brands which have spent much more, but like About You, for example, they're like obviously spending tremendously amount of money. But it really is the success story, I think, and the rate of growth there, which really has resonated with them.
Nice. And so what countries have you spoken from stages for Facebook?
In Germany, obviously, and London and Milan.
Nice. Taking over Europe. Nice.
Yeah, I love Europe.
Nice. And so before we go into the rapid fire section of the podcast, is there any specific advice that you would give to owners of DMVBs, e-commerce owners at the different points in their journey that where they can perhaps skip a mistake or two that you've made, or just learn from your experience?
I mean, good question. I mean, tons of mistakes, right? I guess one of the biggest challenges for us was, from an organization point of view, to find the right people and to hire them and to build an organization from scratch, especially if you don't really have experience in that space. And for us, we really hired lots of people and quite quickly. And you really have to make sure that you have the right leadership principles in place, the right leadership system. So what we are doing right now is we are implementing OKRs, which is a leadership and management style from Google, from Facebook. They're using it to really give every employee's OKRs, which are basically objectives and key results. So every employee has every quarter 3 objectives, which are goals, and their success of their work gets measured by key results, which is basically a number. And it's really important to measure the success of your employees and obviously the business by your numbers, and to really give every employee a qualitative a goal to work towards too. And that's something I wish someone would have told me earlier, to have the right leadership management system in place, because otherwise you won't really be able to grow to a significant amount of people, and you need to have people in order to grow the business, because you really can't do it all by yourself, and you need to have the right talent, and you need to have the team, and you need to have a strong culture, because the most important thing are people.
Absolutely. And so where can people learn more about you, your brand, view your case studies, and so on?
Obviously, if you want to look at our brand, it's paulvalentine.com. We have case studies on Facebook and Snapchat, just search them on Google. And best way to reach me is on LinkedIn or Instagram. And it's just Paul Franzreb, or simply go to Paul Valentine and click on following, and you will find myself as well.
Nice. All right. Okay. So you've been phenomenal so far, Paul. As I said, you haven't even broken a sweat under the peppering of questions. So now I've got some rapid fire ones, but they're a little bit more generic, but also quite fun. So so we move into the rapid fire part of the podcast. I ask the questions quickly. You can take as long as you want to answer them. Are you up for it?
Of course. Let's go.
Are you two thumbs up for it? There's those thumbs. All right, question number one. What superhero would you be and why?
Batman?
Why?
Because he puts the greater good of the city over himself.
Nice, like that.
All right.
What's one thing that people often incorrectly assume about you?
That's a good question. I can't really answer that.
No?
No.
You gonna give it a stab?
Yeah. Could you?
Yeah. People. I mean, but to give you an idea, some of the answers. Not that like they would be relevant to you, but you know, for example, we had Ryan Daniel Moran on the show, and he said people often assume he's an asshole. Because he talks about money a lot and owns capitalism.com and all the rest of it, but he's really not. People just assume it.
Yeah, that's unfortunately I think true for lots of entrepreneurs, because really entrepreneurs really think about the entire business, the future, and some employees might, for example, think that you are an asshole. But it really comes down to perspective, right? Because you need to have perspective of the entire business, of every little piece of information, to really understand the bigger picture and to really understand the decisions and thoughts behind everything, right?
Okay.
I think that's true for every entrepreneur, right?
Absolutely. Question three, what is the most pointless subject taught at schools and what would you replace it with?
In my opinion, and don't kill me for that, music, art, religion. I'm not saying they are pointless and stupid. It's just, in my opinion, at least for the German school system, we don't really teach IT and developing and that stuff. And I really don't understand it. And I think it's we're missing out there. And I think that's probably true for most of the school system, because most of the education systems are not really built for the digital age. And you really have to learn your coding and developing through by yourself, basically, which is not the right way, in my opinion.
What's one random act of kindness you've either witnessed or done yourself?
What we have done with Paul Valentine is we have spent, for example, $20,000 to Australia. During the Australian bushfire crisis, and we have spent also money now on donated money for the World Health Organization for the Corona Relief Fund. So we are doing here and there some donations with our brands, which is nice and something I'm proud of and something I want to do even more in the future, especially as our reach and resources broaden increases.
Love that, and yeah, could not agree more. Even from day one, before we, you know, were profitable or anything with Nubrew, we were given a percentage of our revenue actually away. So not profits, revenue away to our charitable partner, and just baked it in from the start. And I think it's so important that brands use their success to make the world a better place. I talk about it all the time with the brand Smarter Destiny. Like, I've got it like on the poster there on the wall. Like, I call it enlightened entrepreneurs, but it's so, so important. So it's amazing to hear that you're doing that as well. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Coffee with 5 to 10 gram coconut oil.
Nice.
Because that really boosts your energy, because coconut oil has lots of saturated fats in there, which are good and which really provide energy and which really help your mental ability to focus and stuff like that. So it's a great energy boost in the morning, and it tastes actually also quite good.
And how does that vary from, say, bulletproof coffee, which is what I'm drinking at the moment?
I think it's quite similar or same. It's just a different – they're using also MCCs, I think. And I haven't tried one, frankly speaking. I should.
I'll give it a go. Do it every day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, so for you and anybody curious, so Bulletproof Coffee is a single source, organic, ideally freshly blended, freshly ground coffee. And in there's a teaspoon of C8 oil, which is a more concentrated version of MCT oil, which is which is obviously a concentrated version of coconut oil. And then a good dollop of butter. So organic grass-fed, organic butter from grass-fed cows. So Kerrygold, Yeo Valley, like your organic butters. Naming some brands there because you're European and so you've probably heard of them.
Yep.
sorry, other people on the audience. So like a good amount, like 150 grams, like a finger width, if you're cutting it from a block of butter in there, and then blend it up. And the blending process is super important because that's how it stops it tasting oily. It just tastes like a delicious, creamy coffee. It's a replacement for breakfast. So you stay in a fasted state from the day before because there isn't any solid food. So you're giving your organs a break. But it's got the oil in there that you mentioned for the clean energy. But it also keeps you feeling satiated, full through to lunch. So I've done it now like every day for 5-ish years, I think. Highly recommend it. Bulletproof Coffee. That's obviously the brand name that Dave Asprey gave it. But you know, that's what it is. I can give you more information if you're interested in trying it, man. What's one mistake you made in your life, and what did you learn from it?
I think I made tons of mistakes, as everyone. And the most important thing is just to learn from them. But I think one thing was that, especially in the beginning when we started our business, we stayed in university and we didn't drop out of it immediately because obviously it was unsure if it will succeed or not. And I think we could have been actually even far further if we would have dropped out earlier. But obviously you hear voices around you which say, hey, stay in university and stuff like that. And they again just listen to your own gut, and if you're feeling it's the right thing to do, then do it.
Nice. What does the first 30 to 60 minutes of your day look like, and at what time does it typically start?
That is a good question, which comes down back to obviously daily routine. And for me, usually I'm more of a night person, so I usually work till 1 to 2 a.m. in the morning. But recently I've started to wake up every day at 7 a.m., which is early for my thing. And then I take I make myself a coffee with coconut oil, and I get out some fresh air. I simply sit on my balcony for 5 to 10 minutes and think about my day and stuff that is important to me, and I try to reflect. And then I usually get directly straight into work because I'm really focused and concentrated in the beginning of the day. and then I basically don't eat. So I try to stay. I don't try to eat as for as long as possible, because it will slow down your system. And if I eat, then I try to make it light, and then I try to eat one time a day in a very big, big meal, so to say. So it's almost intermittent fasting, but. Yeah, sometimes I'll throw in some nuts, for example, but we're shifting lots into the nutrition thing here. But usually, the most important thing is to wake up at the same time every day and to go to bed at the same time every day, to really make sure that your body is working like a machine.
Nice. So what time are you going to bed now?
I try to get 7 hours of sleep every day, because sleep is so important. And I really feel like if you sleep less, you're not benefiting from that. Although you would have more time, you won't be able to think as clearly and as focused as you are if you sleep more. So I go to bed at between 12 and 1 a.m. Between midnight and 1 a.m. basically.
Nice. Where do you go, or what do you do to get inspired?
The States. I love California. I love L.A. And it really helps me to think bigger, because everything in the US is 10x bigger than in Europe, especially in Germany. So I love the States.
Who do you idolize above anyone else, and why?
Elon Musk. Because he is such an inspiring entrepreneur, because his business has really changed and improved the world, and he is doing it because not of the fact because he wants to be successful, he wants to build a business, but he wants to help advance the world's transition into sustainable energy with Tesla, and also obviously help the world to potentially escape or expand into another planet. And that is really inspiring, in my opinion, to really do something for the greater good of humanity.
Nice. What book or books do you read or gift the most?
How Google Works. Yes, I love that one. I highly recommend it. It's my favorite book.
Wow, I've never heard of that one.
It really shows you how Google scaled from zero to the big company they are today, and all their leadership principles, and how they hire people and find people and manage people and stuff like that. It's truly inspiring, and it's a $1 million advice for $15.
What silly thing should people do more of?
Good question. I think simply do whatever they want and really not really care about what other people think about them. And if that's something that's silly, then just do it as long as you are happy. Right?
Nice. If you could change one world problem with one wish, what would it be?
I mean, there are so many world problems, from food and water to health. It's a difficult question.
It's deliberately difficult, Paul.
I guess improving our already advanced health system even more, to really cure every health problem on earth with an easy and affordable way, because there are so many people dying on stupid things, right?
I like that answer. Would you rather always be 10 minutes late or always be 20 minutes early?
Obviously, 20 minutes early, I'm German.
I mean, it's not just Germans answering that question in that way. I think I would say that's majority answer it that way. Why?
It's simply disrespectful to be late, because if it's 9 a.m., then it's 9 a.m., and if someone is 10 minutes late, then the other person is waiting 10 minutes and losing their 10 minutes of potentially productive time. So you always should try to be on time, or better even early, right? And I tried, and sometimes I missed it in my internal meeting stuff, like because simply other things took longer than expected, stuff like that. But I try to be on minute every time.
Nice. And would you rather move to a new city or town every single week or never be able to leave the city or town you were born in?
Definitely move to a new city or town every week. Because I think it's, I mean, most of successful people are notorious movers, right? Like they don't talk about the houses they own or stuff like that. They talk about the places they go, the people they are meeting. And for me, I'm always in my happy place when I travel because it really inspires me and it really broadens my horizon and it really encourages me to think bigger.
100% agree with that. So outside of the US, where are some of your favorite places on earth?
I mean, I like also Europe, like Southern Italy and France, for example. I like also Asia side of things with Australia, for example. I mean, there's so many nice places in the world. It really doesn't matter where I go. I just have to go.
Is it typically a warm place or a cold place?
Yep,
or doesn't matter?
I definitely like warm places.
Yeah. Same. And then final question, Paul, and you've been phenomenal so far, and this is such an important question that really rounds things off nicely. Question 15, what makes you happiest?
Good question. I guess one thing that really makes me happy is helping people to achieve more, and be that with my employees or be that other people who message me on Instagram, who I help with answering their questions and providing value. And that makes me happy. Like, I really want you to give to the world. And I think that really drives happiness for me. And then obviously also that my family and friends are safe. That, I mean, we are so blessed, most of us and probably also the listeners to this podcast. And if we got perspective to what goes on in the world, there's no other reason to not be happy, right?
Love that answer. Amazing. So, Paul, that pretty much ends the rapid fire question round. I do like to ask at this point, do you have any asks or requests of the audience?
Just do your own thing and believe in yourself.
Do your own thing, believe in yourself. You should get that made into a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or a printable face mask, maybe. Just across there. You know, right across the mouth. Something like that. Anyway, Paul, thank you so much for taking the time today to share with us, to be open about your tactics, your failures, your successes. It's been really, really enjoyable and eye-opening to learn the things that you've been talking about and to share in the success that you've had, that even big brands like Facebook recognizes as being quite rare. And it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Martin. It was a pleasure. And if anyone wants to reach out to me, feel free. LinkedIn, Instagram, more than happy to help. And all the best to everyone.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. Don't forget, we release 2 interviews per week, plus a shorter, actionable and tactical show in between. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.